Welcome to a worldwide online meeting with John Sherman, broadcast live from Ojai, California on May 12th, 2013.
Hello, everybody. This is John. I'm glad to be here. Glad to see you guys here. I think I'm going to begin by speaking very briefly about something that I have in the past been unwilling to speak about because it seemed to be pretty much beside the point. But now, with actually quite a large increase in the number of people that are coming to us and coming to our work, and many of them coming from spiritual endeavors, there's been some difficulty that has been expressed more and more frequently now over the view that what I am saying here is that what we have found has never been found by anybody else, and that there has been and will be no one else who is as uniquely qualified as I am to have found it, and that everything that everyone else is doing is without value. The complaints are that that's the viewpoint that I express, that I am uniquely qualified for being in this position, that I have found something that I think is unique but really is not, and that nobody else is doing anything worthwhile. And there's been a number of those that have shown up here in the last week, really, and I'm kind of pleased to see it happening, because I'm kind of pleased to see the upsurge in the interest in the work in a whole bunch of realms, not only the spiritual realm, but in the spiritual realm for sure. And I would like to kind of just put an end to that, because it is it's a viewpoint that comes from a viewpoint that has nothing whatsoever to do with what we're doing here. And it would be better, I think, if we could all just kind of let the spiritual realm be spiritual and let this be what it is, which is a simple, uncomplicated, non-spiritual, non-religious, psychological movement of the mind that, against all expectations and against all odds, actually brings an end to dissatisfaction with being alive as a human being. It does not solve spiritual problems. It does not give us vast spiritual insights. It does not give us anything of the kind that has anything to do with those profoundly interesting questions and investigations into the actual nature of existence. It has nothing to do with that. It's my opinion that we have elevated the general dissatisfaction with being alive as a human being into a huge spiritual matter, when in fact, and what we've done is we have brought spiritual means, spiritual, philosophical, and religious means to a problem that truly turns out to be merely psychological. Turns out to be the distortion of the personality by the context of irrational fear of life that pretty much afflicts us all. And that once seeing that that is the cause of the problem, it becomes apparent, finally, if you, as a result of investigation and so forth, that it becomes apparent that for reasons that seem at first blush to be absolutely obvious, but really aren't quite so obvious, this simple act of the mind, this is an act of the mind, the simple act of the mind to try and get the direct experience of the person, actually the personness of me, destroys the context that has created an entire psychology given over to protecting me from life, protecting me from the complication of being alive as a human being, to protect me from what seems to be the inimical nature of life as a human being. It seems to put an end to that context, and in a manner that has nothing whatsoever to do with coming to a new understanding of my nature. That's a philosophical and metaphysical concern that we might well continue to investigate. This doesn't do that. It says nothing at all about my actual nature. It says nothing at all about the nature of existence itself. It says nothing at all about God or no God. It says nothing at all about any of that. It doesn't even say anything about the nature of consciousness. And it certainly doesn't say anything that defines me. I am plainly not subject to being defined. There's too little to me to find definition to. So what the looking does is not produce the clear understanding of the deep nature of existence of a human being. It does not produce a deep understanding of my nature and what I am. All that it does is destroy the context of fearfulness and anxiety that itself has created a mind, a personality, that is based and serves that idea that life is dangerous, that life is untrustworthy, that life is dishonest, that life is something that I must protect myself from. And once that is gone, what remains is sanity, an inclination towards self-reliance, growing practical intelligence, and ever deepening love of living, absent the idea that life is out to get me. Now, I also think, and I want to make this clear too, I also am convinced from my own experience and from my understanding of all of the those that I have read about and had experience with who have in the past been seeking a spiritual solution to the human problem, I am also very much aware of the fact that many of them, those who are, you know, everything that we humans do, all of the fields of endeavor and activity that we participate in, have their share of charlatans and frauds and fakes and so forth. And that's true in the religious and spiritual realms as much as it is in the political and other realms of human activity. But it's also very clear that within the realm of spiritual aspiration, there have been a few over the centuries who have stumbled upon the same movement that eradicates the context of fearfulness and anxiety, but did so in a context themselves that was either religious or spiritual or philosophical or metaphysical or a whole mixture of the whole bunch of that, and could not find a way to actually identify the simplicity and the practical, mechanical nature of the act that had freed them from the fear of life. But free they are, nevertheless. And free of the fear of life, anyone will sooner or later come to the desire to make that available to other people, to ease the suffering of other people. Those who have accidentally eliminated that context of fearfulness and anxiety in the past, and therefore have authentically become fearless and authentically fallen in love with life, they try to speak to us in a way that tells us what it feels like and in a way that identifies what the problematic areas of our understanding of things lie, and try to bring us to some way of reconciling our erroneous ideas about things with reality in a way that is, unfortunately, not very effective. The reason it's not very effective, and let me speak about the very honored and rightly so, investigation into the nature of our nature, which goes by the name of self-inquiry, which seems to me to be the closest we've come, although since it occurs in a context that presumes that the nature of the problem and the nature of the solution is spiritual or religious or metaphysical or philosophical or whatever and so forth, they've been unable to actually identify the simple act that they performed and pass it on to us. Instead, they have told us what it should feel like to be free, what it should feel like to be a natural human being. They have pointed out to us the stupidities that we hold to be true and encouraged and urged us to abandon them, to see through them, to understand that they're wrong, and to understand rather the truth of our nature and so forth. Unfortunately, that has not had much success. It's not that it's exactly wrong, it's just not close enough to the point to have much effect on the hearer. The point is the most simple, uncomplicated, and undemanding mental act of the mind, that consists in trying to find, not finding who I am, or not trying to find my true nature, or not trying to find the truth of who I am, or anything of the kind. I am not looking for myself. I am trying to look at myself. And there's a world of difference there. A world of difference. Especially when offered to minds that themselves, and I'm very familiar with that mind, that minds that themselves are churning with misunderstandings and misinformation and wrong ideas about what's happened and what needs to be done and so forth and so on. So I have great respect and great honor for those who have stumbled upon this as we stumbled upon it. And, you know, Ramana comes to mind, Ramana Maharshi, Nisargadatta, certainly the Buddha, in this country, Douglas Harding, a wide range of people who clearly, it's obvious to me, have broken free of the fear and still have been unable to communicate to us anything practical that would bring the dissolution of the fear to our own lives. Sometimes we manage to wrestle the truth out of our efforts to speak in a language that is incapable of conveying the simplicity of the act, but not that often. So it's not that I have, that I think that I'm better than all those folks. I certainly, if you know anything at all about my history, you certainly will know that it would be impossible for someone with a history like mine to believe themselves to be special in some way that makes them the world savior, the savior of humanity, or anything of the kind, or better than anybody else in the world, really. It's a ridiculous idea. So, to try to sum this up, I'm sure that I will, that this is going to recur, this misunderstanding of what it is that we're actually about here, because it's a misunderstanding. It has nothing to do with spiritual truth. It has nothing to do with finding out the truth of my nature. That's something that may well be a worthwhile endeavor, and certainly would be better served in a mind that was free of that incessant, ridiculous fear of being alive. What has happened here is that in coming together of circumstance over which that I had nothing to do with, and that in fact in trying to wrestle my way free of that web of circumstance that had come to me was when I stumbled on this. This came to me as the end of a period of really misguided internal effort to free myself of the idea that anything would ever be better. But now that it's here, that whole wrestling with God business and wrestling with the angels and the knitting of my brow and all of that stuff, that is revealed to be just a ridiculous, unnecessary complicating of what in fact is a really simple thing. And its simplicity owes nothing to me. I owe everything to its simplicity. Its simplicity has nothing to do with the specialness of me. Its simplicity is just simple. It's just a simple movement of attention, a simple movement of the mind's eye, trying to get an immediate direct taste, not of what I am or who I am or my nature or anything of the kind, but just the feel of me, the feel of me. At the bottom of everything, the extremely tenuous and faint feeling sensation that I recognize to be me, the feel of me. And what comes of that is not the revelation of the truth of the universe or the truth of existence or the truth of who I am or the truth of anything whatsoever. It doesn't have any effect on that whatsoever. What comes of that is the destruction of the underlying context that has caused us to be incapable of seeing the truth of anything, ever. That underlying context that holds that life itself is something that is not a gift, but a curse. That holds that life itself is not something to be engaged in, to be immersed in, life. That life itself is the enemy. Life itself is the problem. That, and particularly life as a human being, is the problem. And it's because of that deep, long-standing, very, very long-standing, an unexamined assumption that underlies it all, that we have come to the pass that we are in now. that we have come to the pass in which humans are against humans, in which atrocities, the nature of which are not even to be spoken of, and are inflicted on human beings by other human beings, in which people actually seek suicide and death as a as escape from life through death, through suicidal death as a way of putting an end to the misery. It's that that goes. Life remains as it is, complicated. Sometimes hard, sometimes painful, sometimes filled with pleasure, sometimes soaring with with speechless wonder at being alive as a human being. The other thing that happens is that the one thing that we have, you know, we seem to divide ourselves into two camps. One camp says there's nothing whatsoever we can do. Everything is predetermined. Everything is preordained. And that view runs through a wide range of spiritual understandings and spiritual practices, and a wide range of religious understandings and religious practices. That everything is predetermined. There are Christians who believe that. There are many people that believe that. But it turns out that the reason that belief has become so popular, and it is popular, no question about it, the devil made me do it. The reason that belief has become so popular is because we are prevented from understanding the power that we do have by the fog of fear that contaminates everything. And it turns out we do have some things we can say about the way the life unfolds. It turns out that we do have power that is unexpected. And it has nothing whatsoever to do with wrestling with the circumstances themselves, wishing they were different, praying to God they're different, beating my head against the wall trying to make them different. It has to do with a fearless human mind discovering the fact that despite the obvious reality that most of what's happening in the world, the case as we see it right now, as we are sitting here right now, I'm talking, you're listening, that all of that is the current outcome of an ocean of cause and effect over which we have nothing to say, that reaches deep back into the deep past. Circumstances like that. It is like the top surface of an ocean of cause and effect, so that life as it presents itself to us in this moment, certainly there's no way we can kind of wash our hands of that and make it turn into, oh, I don't know, nothing, probably. Mostly what we try to do is escape from it. But it turns out that by, in the absence of the fear, that it turns out that we actually have the power to make a difference in the way life unfolds in the future. That we can be a cause of changing the effects that is that surface of that ocean by choosing what we attend to and by intelligently choosing what deserves our attention and what isn't that important to us. And that power, which we have always had but has been crippled by in the past by the fog of fear that distorts everything. That power of putting attention where I want it to go, that power discernment of things that are worthy of attention and of the vast array of things that are not worthy of attention, by discernment of the things where attention can have effect, and then putting it there, turns out that that has an enormous and previously unsuspected effect on the way the life unfolds in the future, from now on. And that's what this act does. It doesn't kill the mind. It doesn't destroy the mind. It doesn't transform the experience of life into a one color, one feel, one smell, one sound, emptiness. It doesn't do anything like that. It doesn't tell you who you are. It doesn't explain to you what your nature is or where you came from. It merely rids you of that which has stood in the way of you being as intelligent and effective and in love with life as is your right, your birthright. So I don't think there's anything special about me. I do think there's something very special about the discovery of this act of looking. But even that, pertaining to me, I had no idea that was happening when it happened. I was wrestling with the angels when it happened. It's only in retrospect that it became clear what had happened. And it's only in retrospect, within the context of 14 years of speaking with you folks and all those who have come before you, trying to tell the truth from the lie, trying to find a way to identify the things that I was saying that were useless and find some way in to to what I knew must be the actual heart of the matter. No, and I knew must not be anything that I'd heard of before. Some things sound a lot like it. You know, look for the truth of who you are. Sounds like look at yourself. But they are like night and day. Truly. To look at yourself is a very small thing. To try to discover the truth of who you are is something entirely different. And you may find interest in that and explore that once the fear is gone. I honor all of those for the thousands of years of the effort that we have put into trying to make life as a human being palatable. I honor them. If they have any relation whatsoever to what we're doing here, it is to be the shoulders that we stand on. Their courage and their determination in the face of consistent and continuous failure to have much effect on the devotees and so forth that came before them. You know, Ramana often was perplexed at how little people paid attention to what he was trying to say. And of course we paid attention, so little attention to what he was trying to say, because he himself had developed the approach that he thought was what needed to be conveyed within a long period of immersion in the Hindu religious traditions at the temple on Tirunelveli, seeking himself to understand what had happened to him. So I don't disrespect any of those folks. I am, in fact, the fact that they, men and women, but mostly men we hear of, like Ramana and Nisargadatta and Douglas Harding and a bunch of others, the obvious authenticity of the fearlessness of these folks is what made it impossible for me to come to the conclusion in the end that there was nothing that could be done. So the thing to take from this is not anything whatsoever that you might think I am saying about the spiritual teachings of the spiritual teachers. The thing to take from this is that from our point of view, what we are doing is entirely outside of that entire realm of aspiration and effort. That doesn't demonize that realm. It just says that what we're doing is less than that. It's what needs to happen first. And it's not spiritual. It is actually psychological. And that seems more apparent the more time that I put into this. So, okay. Oh, another one, by the way. And you know, it's a funny thing. I always, whenever anybody calls attention, my attention, to some idea of someone who is saying the same thing as me, the first thing I do is go and look and find everything I can find about what that person has said. Because I'm quite willing to discover that there are others like this. We could join together. We could do something. But the reversion into the spiritual realm is something that I have no interest in. That's a whole different activity. And I also, now I read all the time. Oh, and by the way, Krishnamurti is another one. Krishnamurti was my hero when I was in prison. I was so impressed by the fact that he had declined to become the world savior that the Theosophists wanted him to become and went on his own. But Krishnamurti, too, was almost impossible to understand unless you kind of were in love with him, which I was. But nothing he said did me any good as far as ridding me of this problem. Another one, by the way, and I'm just saying this so that you can see what I think about these things. Lots of people have stumbled upon this. I've been reading recently, and in fact, a friend of ours who is in the grassroots movement and active in the forums and so forth, who is not here this morning, called my attention the other day to Tolstoy, and something that Tolstoy had said that she thought was really quite wonderful and something that was consistent with what I was talking about. And after that, or actually at the same time, I had read about Tolstoy somewhere else, and now I have gotten his book Confessions, which is his autobiographical assessment of his life and his work and so forth. And I read his story about what was happening to him and what his life was like and so forth and so on. And he's a brother. So everywhere, and in the religions too, everywhere, there are people who have authentically rid themselves of the problem. In most cases, maybe in all cases, but in most cases, they did not know how that had happened. They did the best they could in coming up with an explanation for it that they thought would be helpful to us, but trapped as they were within the big tent of spirituality and religion and the nature of being, they couldn't find a way to get to the simplicity of the act itself, the simple human act itself that is merely trying to get a direct and immediate taste of what it feels like to be you. So I hope that's helpful. I'm sure that it won't put an end to it, but at least now I have something I can suggest people go and listen to get an idea of what I think about all of that. There's nothing else that I have to say. We have been working for the last week. I'm trying to develop a new way of talking to people about money, because what we're doing is not, you know, it requires money, and we give everything away for free, and that'll never change. And we're now beginning to embark on a dedicated and devoted effort to get the news of this act to the entire, to the ears of all of humanity. And so we've been kind of wrapped up in that, and I don't have much of anything else to talk about. So I'm done. And if you want to talk about these things or anything else, just raise your hand, and I'll be happy to talk. Terry?
My name's Terry. Nice to meet you.
I'm pleased to meet you. I'm John.
I've been on a couple of these calls before. I didn't speak. And then for a long time, I didn't have the device to get on the calls at all. And so it's good to be on here with you all. I'm guessing you just opened up for questions and reports, yeah?
Yes, right.
It's probably a fairly universal question for people embarking on this process, really. And I haven't really worked out how I'm going to say it. It probably boils down to, am I doing this right?
As far as the question of doing it right is concerned, it's a strange thing. The only thing that comprises the doing of this right is the intent to get a direct sensational feel of you. And the two important things about that, the two things that distinguish that, is that one is that you're trying to get just the taste of you, the sensation of you, which is extremely subtle and has been neglected for pretty much our entire lives, because the fierce armies don't like us looking in that direction. But what we're looking for is not information about me. We're not looking for to understand my true nature. We're not looking to understand what I am or what I am not. All we're looking for is the actual sensation, that is the feel of the presence of you here. That's the one part that is critical and very simple, really. And we have a tendency to complicate it. It's just like any other subtle sensation that comes and goes within the body or the mind. All sensations come in the mind. It's not anything special. It's just you. And the only thing about it that makes it a little different from everything else is that it is, that the feel of you is extremely subtle and faint and difficult to, it can feel difficult to taste. It turns out that really doesn't matter whether you get the conscious taste of you or not, because the act itself, the attempt to do so, it can't fail. And we've seen that. Both common sense tells me that to be the case, and also the experience of many people, including myself, tells me to be the case. I didn't know that I had succeeded when I succeeded. I didn't know what I had done until years later in the effort to actually be of help to people. But that's the one part of it that's different from everything else. It has nothing to do with any knowledge or understanding like that. It just has to do with the sensation. And the second thing that's different about it is that the sensation we are looking for is not self. It's not God. It's not consciousness. It's not awareness. It's not any of that. It is the personal pronoun. It is the me-ness there. And when you go there, if you have a direct taste of it for just a tenth of a second, you will recognize that to be the case. That's what I feel like. That's what I always feel like. No matter what's going on in the life, no matter what other things are happening, other sensations, that's what I always feel like. Now, saying that that's what I always feel like is not putting some requirement that what you actually accomplish is everything or whatever. It's just that it's the first person pronoun. You call it me. So you're looking for what it feels like to be me. And that actually can't fail. So doing it right is first of all seeing that what you're looking for is an actual sensation and not some understanding or the arising of some state. What you're looking for is an actual sensation. The sensation itself is very faint, very subtle, and sometimes difficult to know. It's sometimes difficult to know that you've actually tasted it. The second thing is that the sensation you're looking for is not the sensation of what it feels like, what awareness feels like, or consciousness feels like, or true self feels like, or anything else feels like except simple little me. Just me. And if that's what guides you, you can't fail. Really, you can't. Okay, let me know, write to me, or, you know, get your sound fixed, and we can talk about this at greater length. Okay?
Thanks, John. Yeah, thank you.
Okay. Violet? Is it Violet?
Yes, it's Violet.
Hi, Violet.
Hi, how are you?
I'm very well, are you?
I'm good, thank you. I'm a little bit nervous.
It's okay.
Okay. About 6 years ago, I had a lot of spiritual experiences, and it got me into, you know, I was Christian, and that just dropped out of my life, and I started, you know, searching, and 3 years into that, I stumbled into your teaching, and for some reason, you know, I looked at it, and I thought it was supposed to be the I am, practice the I am, say the I am, and feel my existence, and I did that for about 3 years, and then about a month ago, I went back, you know, I would stop, and I would start it again, and it helped in some way, but I just never felt really okay until about a month ago, I went back on your site, and I looked at your video, and it said to look at me. And I did that with you when you were doing it on the video. And as soon as I did it, I felt like the anxiety that I felt all my life in my chest. I felt it kind of cool down. And it just became a different sensation. It felt like a feel of comfort. And I don't know how to explain it. It just felt really, really good. And so I started to do that. And for about a week, I felt like I was here for myself while I was doing it. That was the point that I was looking for, is that I was there for my life, watching what's going on. And it just gave me a great sense of being okay and everything was fine, even though things never, you know, nothing changed. I would get upset, but the feeling of being upset was superficial. I don't know if you know what I mean.
I do.
It's not rooted anymore inside. It was on the surface. It didn't bother me as much. Maybe it bothered me for a couple minutes or so, and then it was nothing. And I was very happy, you know, to have those feelings, to finally get rid of the fear and the anxiety and but that just lasted for about a week. And I feel like, oh my God, is this another thing? I tried and it really didn't work, or, you know, what's going on? So just trying to make a long story short, I have a lot of things that happened to me, you know, during my spiritual search, but maybe I'll write this email to you one day, but, you know, I just want to know what happened, like, why is it gone now?
Well, you're not gone. You're still here.
Yes.
That's pretty apparent, right?
Yes.
And this is really good. This is good news. What you just conveyed to me is consistent with what almost everybody goes through as a result of this looking, and comes out the other end in, just alive and happy to be alive and in love with their life. Now here's what seems to occur. And I'm going to advise you, and I really think you should do this. This is what's happening here is really kind of unique. I want you to go to the forums at Just One Look, and read the things that are being said there. Here's the course of kind of the course of recovery from, and I still think it's correct to call this period a period of recovery from what actually was more of a disease than a profound existential failure. Here's what happens. You look, the context of fear goes away. And I'll tell you, and you'll see at the forums that this is consistently how this unfolds. You look, and for most, there's a kind of a kiss and a feeling of relief and distance from the anxiety. The anxiety disappears. You begin to see the beauty of life and so forth and so on. And then after a period, that period, which lasts for an indeterminate period of time, I'm hoping that that period will extend in time. But after that period, the most people experience increase in fearfulness and anxiety and kind of existential dread and a sense that something's wrong and everything's going to go back to the same again. And what that seems to be is that, think of it this way, okay? I've found that this is a useful context to put what's happening into. When, prior to you looking at yourself, prior to that moment when you actually had the direct contact with what it feels like to be you, from the beginning of your life, from the very beginning of your life, a personality has been forming that, and you can call it personality, you can call it mind, it's all the same thing. A personality has been forming that consists in a number of habits of relationship and traits of behavior and assumptions about what's true and what's not true, and the whole array of things that make up the personality of you. The interface between you and the world at large. That's what the personality is. That's what the mind is. The interface between you and the world. And as I said, it consists of a number of psychological structures. And all of those psychological structures have grown over the years, watered by and fed by the atmosphere of fearfulness and anxiety that assumes that life is wrong and life is bad and so forth. So all of those ideas are ideas that serve to keep you distanced from the experience of your life and forever doubtful of the worth of anything and pessimistic pretty much continuously and fearful of relationship and fearful of society as a whole and fearful of everything. That's just the case. That's what comes about as a result of a mind that is formed in an atmosphere of fearfulness and anxiety. And the fearfulness and anxiety I speak of is not very energetic. It's just the background of everything. Now, that's the way you come to the looking. And the spiritual aspirations and all of those things also are received into that same contaminated apparatus that is all that you have to evaluate what's happening to you and to relate to the world and to the people in it and to your own psychological problems and so forth. Now you do the looking. You look. And what happens when you look is that background, that really faint background of anxiety that sometimes flares up into fearfulness and sometimes doesn't, but that background goes away. It just goes away in the looking. And that's what you experienced when you reported that pretty much, directly, that's actually what happened. That is what happens. But that whole array of sickened psychological relationships and characteristics and methodologies and understandings and assumptions and so forth, that's still there. That's still the only means that you have to have the experience of your life as it unfolds. It's being experienced through the medium of all of those psychological mechanisms. And the truth is, but now you're not even protected by the distance from your life, because that's been taken away. And those psychological mechanisms are not protected from the reality of your life either. And they can get quite crazy. But they're on their way out. So what happens is, we come to the looking with a mind that's conditioned by fear. We take a look at, and we get a direct taste of what it feels like to be me. The cause of all of that fearfulness and anxiety goes away, leaving this whole personality kind of adrift, without an anchor or a direction to go in. What will happen now, as time goes on, Violet, is that you will notice that those kind of neurotic and fearful mechanisms that have comprised your mind, your personality, your interface with the world, they begin to just not show up when you would expect them to. And you may notice that happening. Some neurotic thing that you would expect to happen in a given set of circumstances just doesn't show up. And the other thing that occurs at the same time as this, in conjunction with this, is the arising of new ways of looking at things, the arising of new sanity and new intelligence that looks at things uncontaminated and undistorted by the fog and stench of fear that previously has ruined everything. So you'll notice that too. You will notice from time to time, as the time goes on, you will notice unexpected circumstances in which something that's really sane appears. Some idea, some way of looking at it, some relationship with it that is obviously different and sane and untroubled will be present. And this proceeds for a time on its own. And there are ways to, by the way, there are ways to hasten and to make that time actually useful rather than just difficult. But over time, whether you do anything or not, the old ways of looking at things will fall away, and what will be left is the new ways of looking at things. And the new way of looking at things is sane, intelligent, and in love with living. I see that something has happened, and you might have gone offline, but I'm going to continue saying this because you can hear it in the podcast, that I strongly, strongly urge you to go to the forums. You don't have to do anything. You don't even have to register to read them. Just go to the forums, and in the Looking Forum in particular, read some of the things that have been said there, and I am confident that you will find common ground, and it will reveal to you clearly. It will give you a much better sense of what's unfolding with you. And you can even be helpful to the rest of us. So, I don't know whether you're still here. It says you're offline. So that's it. Let me know when you get this and you hear what I had to say to you. Let me know what you, whether it was helpful to you. Go to the forums. Keep in touch. Let us know how you're doing. And, welcome. Welcome to sanity. Okay, anybody else? Okay, if there's nothing more for us to do here, then we could all leave and enjoy the rest of the Mother's Day. So anyway, if there's nothing more for us to say, if you have nothing more to say, then we should just close this meeting, and Carlo and I can go back to work. Okay, up to you. Anne.
Hi there. Yeah, you're
hi.
Hi,
Anne.
Good to hear you.
Good
you
to
were
hear you.
Just wanted to. To check in, say hi. I'm here in the Woodlands, Texas, and I want to say that when you talk about things that you consider to be nothing, and you say I don't have anything else to talk about, it, even when you talk about things that seem to be nothing to you, I find them to be very helpful and impactful.
Well, I'm very happy to hear that. it makes me, yeah, I'm very happy to hear that.
I mean, you don't say things that don't impact it. It seems like always hit the nail on the head, and it's such a neat thing. I use a lot of spiritual terms, and I have a spiritual background, and yet I certainly know that when I am in that, when I experience myself directly in what it is I think that you're always speaking about, there really are no words. There are not any spiritual words to talk about it. And it's so ordinary, but yeah. What it is, it's life without burden. It's life without just the hardships. I mean, it doesn't mean that there are not difficulties in life. It just means that without the mind going on and having fits about things all the time, life is just nice.
Yes, that's right. That's exactly right. It isn't easy all the time, but it's satisfying.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, because everything, all concepts, all beliefs, all of that stuff just falls off. And it's so nice to be able to speak directly about this, which I know is hard. Because I can hear how difficult it is for you, and certainly it is for me, because it's just life. It's just here. It's just the presence of it, uncomplicated, very simple. It's not what people, what I thought it was at all.
I know. and you know that it's, well, I couldn't say it any better than you. I'm not going to try to gild the lily. That's my experience too, Anne. It's just life, and it is what satisfies the direct minute-to-minute experience of life is what satisfies, not the holding away from life or looking for something else. It is the direct experience of life that satisfies the human.
And I appreciate when you talk about the fear of life. For me, it almost seems like what my mind will do is it has this incessant need to look for a problem.
Yeah.
And then I have to remind myself, it's like, wait a minute. This is just, looking for a problem is a habit that I've developed. It has nothing to do with reality.
That's right.
It's like my mind is addicted to looking for a problem.
That's right.
And then when I get released from that, then that's when the ordinary, simplistic, and easy life is present, and reality is present, and regardless of what's happening outside, it's still okay.
That's well said. Yes, that's right.
And I want to thank you for stripping all the verbiage away from it. And I still use the verbiage. I mean, I use it, and I use spiritual terms. I use a lot of that. But I love the directness of not having to maybe complicate my talk. Sometimes I do because I feel like that I can better communicate with people because they're just, the door's not going to be open if I don't use some of those terms. But I love the stripped down version of reality.
Yeah, and you know, you doubtless will find as time goes on that your voice will clarify more, and you know, it takes time. This isn't an easy thing. You know, it's not like you were saying earlier that it's very hard. What I'm trying to do is very difficult. What I'm trying to do isn't really very difficult. What makes it difficult is the persistence in the minds of the folks that I speak with, of ideas about what I'm saying, that movement of the mind to categorize what I'm saying to be in some other realm that it does nothing to do with. And so that my job is to try to stay straight and clean with the arrow to where it actually wants to go, and to try to be careful not to invite that kind of misunderstanding of what I'm saying. And I wish I were better at it, but I'm getting better all the time.
Well, I appreciate your attempts, and I appreciate it seems like you're clear to me, but I understand what you mean.
Okay.
And thank you so much for being there.
Thank you so much for being here.
Okay, take care.
Okay.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Ann. And Violet, I see that you just showed back up, and I can tell you that there was a time when you went offline and the software indicated that to be true, and I continued for another, I don't know, 4 or 5 minutes, and I advised you that you can listen to the podcast when it comes out, and also I really cannot too strongly advise you to just go to the forums and start reading some of the stories from people just like you who have very similar understandings of what's happening in their life. And it'll be helpful to you. And you might become helpful to other people, too, as time goes on. Okay?
Okay, thank you, John.
Okay. I'm glad to have spoken with you. Stay in touch. Okay?
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay. So that's it. Let's call it a day, and we'll go back to whatever it is that we need to do here today. And you guys enjoy yourself. And if you're with your mothers, love your mothers. Mothers are amazing. Mothers are amazing. You know, most mothers, they become mothers when they're a little more than teenagers. I understand that that's not... not so much the case as in the new millennium and so forth, but I think it probably will remain so. Mothers become mothers when they're pretty much just teenagers. I see them walking the streets and, you know, with babies and baby carriages and so forth. And the commitment in the mind of a mother to be as helpful and worthwhile to her children is unprecedented. And to have such a really life-changing event as having a baby occur in a person that's like 18 or 19 years old and is a challenge that should be honored. So, love your mother. Christopher, we're going to go, but just give me, I'll give you 5 minutes, okay? There you are.
Oh, cool. Oh, I was losing the connection quite a bit, but I wanted to say, John, but I agreed so much with the lady that was speaking a little while back, Anne. Everything that you say is well worth listening to, and thanks for all you're doing. So that was all I wanted to say.
Okay. Well, thank you. I'm not so sure I agree entirely with that, but I'm trying and I'm learning as I go. So thank you for that, Christopher.
Okay. Okay.
Love you all. See you soon. Stay in touch. Help us get this out into the world. This is not in contention or competition with anything. This will cause a great increase and enhancement in the effectiveness of everything we do that's worthwhile. So give us a hand. See you later. I'm leaving now. Carla has some stuff that needs to be that you need to hear. But I'm gone. Thank you so much. Carla?
You just listened to a worldwide online meeting with John Sherman, broadcast live from Ojai, California, on May 12th, 2013. For more live recordings, visit our podcast at www.justoneloop.org.